Welcome to the Piano Sensei Way. I'm your host, Clinton Pratt, and I'm here to help you master the art of running a successful piano teaching studio. Today's episode is a bonus episode, as I was interviewed by Rachel Ehring of the Top Music Piano Podcast. We talk about my journey from solo teaching to hiring a team of instructors and dealing with the challenges and rewards of expanding my studio. We talk about the benchmark program and building community through recitals and group classes, and give tips for teachers considering a similar path. We also talk about upcoming projects and my ongoing work with the American Eurythmic Society. Take a listen.
Today we are diving into a topic that I know interests a lot of teachers. If you have ever thought of hiring another teacher or teachers to teach in your studio, you are going to want to hear today's episode. You're going to find out that it might not be as hard as you thought it was. My guest on the show today is Clinton Pratt. Here's a little about Clinton. Clinton Pratt has played piano for over 40 years and has been teaching piano for over 22 years. He owns a multi-teacher piano studio in Cincinnati, Ohio, is past president of the Ohio Music Teachers Association Southwest District, and is a member of the College of Examiners for the Royal Conservatory of Music based in Toronto, Canada. Clinton has a master's degree in piano, is a nationally certified teacher of music, and holds a teaching certification through the American Eurythmic Society. He is also the president of the Greater Cincinnati Eurythmic Society, has been published in American Music Teacher, and was on the editorial committee for that journal from 2017 through 2021. In addition to teaching and adjudicating, he has given over 50 workshops at local, state, and national conferences on various topics concerning piano teaching and running a successful music teaching business. Clinton recently started a podcast to help teachers also run a successful piano studio, The Piano Sensei Way. Somehow he finds extra time to compose pieces for these students, which are now available to teachers across the world. Here's my chat with Clinton. Hi, Clinton. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today. Would you mind introducing yourself to listeners and tell us a little bit about your piano studio?
Sure. So my name is Clinton Pratt, and I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I own a piano studio called Piano Sensei, and we have six instructors, including myself, about 75 students a week, and we do private lessons, piano, all piano lessons, and we also have periodic group classes as part of that program, but mostly it's just private lessons.
So Clinton, I have been looking forward to talking to you because you may or may not know that I also have a multi-teacher studio. It's a little different because it's in a church, so it's not my own personal studio, but I have teachers under me, and I am so excited to learn from you. I think that I've heard a lot of podcasts where they interview someone who is in charge of this huge school with many locations and 400 students, and I think a lot of piano teachers can't really relate to that, but I've heard teachers say like, yeah, I'd like to hire another teacher or two. Like, that's my long-term dream. So I was really interested to have you come on the show because yours isn't huge yet, but I feel like you're doing it really well, just from what I know, and we'll get into it. But my understanding is that quality is really important to you and you have nice instruments and you're doing a great job. So here we go. Tell us a little bit about how you became a piano teacher and how that journey led to where you are today.
So yeah, I've always played piano. I come from a musical family. My parents sang and my grandma played piano, taught piano. My mom played a little bit of piano, and my sister was actually sort of my first unofficial teacher. She was 6 years older than me. And just as soon as I could like sit up at the piano and move my hands, she would teach me things. So I've always played. I never thought it would be my career, though. I've always loved music, and I also did trombone in school and marching band. I never thought it would be, you know, my career is just always something that I did. And then I won a scholarship competition, piano, and, you know, I could only get the scholarship if I majored in music. So go where the money is. So yeah, so I majored in music to get the scholarship and then realized, oh, actually I like practicing and learning more and, you know, taking all the theory classes and accompanying and all this stuff. So I just continued with that and then went to grad school mainly because I didn't know what else to do or like what kind of job I would have. So I thought, well, I'll just keep studying piano and keep learning music. And then after grad school, I started teaching at a local studio. I did some teaching before that, you know, as well, but I started teaching at a studio just because, again, I really didn't know what else to do. I thought, well, I gotta earn some money. So, but once I started teaching, yeah, I realized that I really liked it. I'm kind of a problem solver. And I like puzzles and math, and I like listening to people and talking to people and figuring out what makes them learn. And I'm very curious and all that stuff. So it was just like a perfect fit with the music and that part of my personality. I just loved it. Every student that came in was different, and I was trying to figure out what would work for them. And I loved helping them figure it out. And then, so it just grew from then, from there, until I have my own studio today.
Yeah. Thanks for your honesty. I kind of had the same journey where I sort of just fell into it and I kept kind of buying into the promise that, oh, if you get another degree, then you'll have more job opportunities. And well, I'm not sure what else to do, so I'll do this for a while. So, and it sounds like you found something that's a really good fit for you. And I bet all that math and puzzle solving comes in handy as a business owner as well, I would think. So we'll get into some of that. When did you know that you wanted to start adding teachers to your studio? Can you tell us a little about the process of, I don't know if you were, if you had your own studio, private studio, and then added teachers or how that came about?
My studio was basically in another multi-teacher studio. I started out there, you know, being hired to teach there. And then I gradually just sort of like made it my own studio where I was just like renting the room because I wanted to handle my own scheduling and set the tuition and all that. So I had my own room where basically I would pay rent. And then I just ran my own studio out of there. But then that building actually suddenly sold and we had like no notice and I had to find some other place to go. And that had a little more room. And so then I thought, okay, well, now this is like my real thing and it's legit. And I was turning away students because I didn't want to take any more. So it was just natural that, oh, I should hire another teacher. That way students can still enroll, but I don't have to, you know, add Saturdays or, you know, teach 7 day weeks or anything. Plus now I had my own space and it had the opportunity to like add another room and another room. So the landlord basically rented me one room and then said, you know, if and when you need another room, let me know and we'll add that on.
So at that point, when you felt like you were turning students away, do you remember how many students you were teaching at that time?
Yeah, I had about, well, let's do the math. I was doing 5 days a week, probably six to eight students each of those days.
Like hour-long lessons? A lot of, or a mix of 30 minute, an hour?
30, 45. Yeah, mix 30, 45 in an hour. So yeah, so I had 30 to 40 students.
So when you first decided to hire the teachers, how did you go about that? Did you start researching about making them employees, or did you decide to do independent contractor? I know that I hear this question all the time. Teachers want to know, do I have to make them employees or can they be independent contractors?
Right. I don't want to get too much into that because I feel like that's just like not my area. Mine are contractors, not employees.
I think it depends on the state you're in too. I think there's different laws based on states. So don't just assume that you can make them one or the other.
Right. And the first teacher I hired, actually, he had substituted for me a couple times. So I knew him already, you know, and that was nice. It was another teacher in our local teacher organization. And the local university, and I had to be absent for various reasons and reached out to him and said, hey, will you, you want to sub for me? So a lot of my students knew him already. And then once I was at this point of needing to hire somebody, that made it easier. You know, we kind of already had a relationship and some of my students already knew him. I actually gave him my Mondays, so I didn't have to teach Mondays anymore. So not only did I add more students who were waiting, but I started teaching less. So that was nice. I'm like, you know what? I want Mondays off. I want 3-day weekends, or at least to have the choice. You know, like I still do work on Mondays, but I don't have scheduled lessons.
Yeah, I love that. So then as you added more teachers, were these also people you knew, or how did you find your other teachers?
Yeah, good question. It's very difficult. I don't know if other teachers struggle with this. It's really hard to find.
I struggle with it. So
teachers, yeah. And let alone good teachers, you know, like it's hard enough just to find anybody. It's hard. It seems like most teachers who are, you know, experienced and qualified and, you know what they're doing, they're already busy or full, you know. So it's more like, okay, trying to find, you know, maybe a grad student or a doctoral student who wants to teach. But then sometimes that's only temporary, you know. Oh, I'm gonna probably move away in a year after I get my master's, you know, so I don't want a teacher for 9 months. And then sometimes also they, like I was, they didn't necessarily want to teach. They just thought, you know, well, I'll let me teach at a studio to make some money on the side, but I really don't want to do that. I want to perform and do all that, you know. So it's difficult for me because I want teachers who are committed and want to teach, and they want that to be their passion like it is mine. But then it's also like, well, I need to take what I can get because I can't find anybody, you know?
I know. I totally feel you. I am in the same boat. In fact, I'm looking for another piano teacher right now for my conservatory. Shout out if anyone in Southern California needs a job. I'm hiring. it's just so hard. Like, I've even had people contact me through Facebook. And so I email them, send them the application, and none of them have submitted the actual application, which feels like a pretty low barrier to get, you know, just fill out the application. And none of them have, even though they said they were interested. So it's a struggle. And I think teachers, they look at the hourly rate and they think, well, I could make a lot more teaching privately at home. And what they don't realize is all the benefits of being part of a music school. I mean, I don't know how you run yours, but I do pretty much all the admin work for my teachers. I'm getting students for them. I'm doing all the scheduling, all the billing. They pretty much just have to show up and teach, which I would think for some teachers, that would be really attractive. Sorry, I'm getting off on a little bit of a tangent here.
No, that's good. Yeah. And I agree. And, you know, I've been on both sides. So I was at a studio where I made such and such an hour. And I remember thinking, gosh, that's not, well, it is a decent amount, but if it was just me, I could charge, you know, double or whatever it was. And now that I'm, you know, paying rent and insurance and buying pianos and tuning pianos and doing all this stuff, you know, the toilet paper, I mean, it adds up. And now that I'm on this end, I'm like, wow, okay, I get it, you know, like, but like you said, there are benefits. And I've got a whole list, but like you said, you know, I collect up the payments and handle all that. So the teachers don't have to, you know, make sure that the tuition was paid. And I mean, that's a huge relief. And, you know, that is worth something. You know, I do all the advertising, all the marketing. I deal with most, you know, any of the problems that come up with clients. That's not like about their lessons. You know, I book all the recitals. I order all the materials. We, you know, the facility, like we have really nice pianos, you know, sure, you can do it on your own, whatever piano you have and at your apartment or house, but, you know, to have a nice facility. That says something. Yeah. And then we also have, you know, things that are unique to my studio, like achievement program that we have that doesn't exist anywhere else. So, okay, you can create your own, but I spent 300 hours making it. So, you know, it's like, I did all that work already.
Yeah. Could you talk a little about that? Because I was curious about how you, I guess, control the quality in your studio. Because like we said, we might not have the top-notch teachers, but how do you go about controlling that everyone is getting a quality education?
Yeah. So it starts with, you know, the hiring process. So the first is, you know, application, interview, and then usually there's a second interview, and I'm asking them a lot of questions like, here's a scenario. There's a 9-year-old boy and he practices like this and plays like this. And what would you do, you know, or what would you do with a 5-year-old in their very first lesson to engage them? So I, you know, ask them specific things and try to get to know them that way. And then I actually have them observe several lessons for sometimes several weeks or even months, so that they know sort of what it's like here and how we teach and the basic philosophies and everything. Then I observe them. So, you know, I'll have them step in like they've been observing lessons with Johnny, you know, every Friday or whatever. And then eventually I'll say, okay, now so-and-so is going to help you with this part, you know, and then I observe the teacher working with the student. And so that tells me a lot. And then, you know, I give them feedback. And, you know, that is an important thing that I want teachers who want to improve their teaching and want the feedback, right? So I can tell if they're like, what do you mean you're going to give me feedback? I don't, you know, I'm like, okay, well, that's not a good fit because I want a culture of, you know, learning from each other. I want people to observe me and say, oh, why did you do that? That was weird. And, you know, maybe I can learn things from them and so on. So it's not really like controlling quality in the sense of you have to do things this way and like that. It's more of just the whole process that kind of weeds out the ones that wouldn't be a good fit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So how long does that process take from when somebody submits their application to when they're actually officially on board?
It varies. It's been just maybe 2 or 3 weeks up to maybe 2 or 3 months, just depending on scheduling, you know, like how much, how often they can come in. Or like if I was a little more desperate with needing a teacher, maybe I would go ahead and hire them, but then still like observe and do some orientation and onboarding like that as it was already started.
Gotcha. And then you were talking about a program with your students to kind of gauge their progress. What does that look like? And maybe along with that, you can tell us if all of your teachers teach out of the same method books or if they're teaching different ways.
Yeah, so we don't dictate what method books teachers use, although I have my favorites and those are in stock. So, you know, Piano Adventures and Alfred Premier Piano Course. Also the Music Tree. So yeah, you know, it's more important just the teacher, how they handle things versus the method. And then, yeah, our achievement program, it's called the Benchmark Program. And it's sort of like karate belts because there's different colors. So like in karate, you have white belt, yellow belt, orange belt, et cetera. Ours with Benchmark, there's like little symbols that look like a piano bench, and those are the colored symbols. And it's very comprehensive. So in order to go to the next level, students have to complete requirements in multiple categories. For example, technique, playing memorized pieces, doing listening and ear tests, sight reading, improvisation. And they also have to get points from participating in events, sharing their music and doing projects and stuff. So once they complete everything in every category and get all the points, then they go on to the next level.
Gotcha. Okay. And is that something that the individual teachers are monitoring and they're doing all the testing for that in lessons, or how does that work?
Yes. And so that's part of like the orientation and onboarding too, is like making sure they know how that works. And, you know, I've got it all set up already. So it's pretty easy. You know, we've got charts to mark everything off and all of the tests and everything. I have that all already, you know, set. Teachers don't have to like make up tests or exercises or anything.
I like that a lot. That kind of, what's the word, levels the playing field, I guess, or brings everyone up to kind of the same level. That's great. I would love to talk just a little about the logistics of your day-to-day or the studio's day-to-day, I guess. Do you do all the scheduling and everything yourself, or are the teachers managing their own schedules? How does that work for you?
I do the initial scheduling. For example, when a student enrolls, I know the teacher's availability, you know, like they're here on Tuesdays and Thursdays from so such and such. And then, so I know the open slots, right? So I'll do the scheduling as far as that's concerned. But then the teacher is free to move things around on their day if they want without asking me. I don't care what they do. You know, like if they're here on Tuesdays in a certain room, I don't care if they switch their 3 o'clock person with their 5 o'clock person. Or
do they have to go in and move it on like your scheduling platform, or do they just do it and it, whatever?
Yeah. We use Teacher Zone. So yeah, it has the schedule. It has all the rooms and everything. Yeah. So as long as they do it in there and that's accurate, that's fine. So they can manage that. Now, if they want me to do it, I will, cause I'm, you know, the admin and that's my job. So, you know, if they're like, hey, I want to move this student, can you do that for me? It's like, well, yes, you could do it, but yes, I'll do it.
Okay. So students, they enroll and do you do a meet and greet with the students or a trial lesson or something?
Yeah, we offer a free trial lesson. I actually love doing that. I know it's my time. And, you know, some people are like, oh, I don't give away my time for free, but it's advertising. I mean, you just think of it as paid advertising. So it's 30 minutes. So yes, it's my time. I meet with everybody. So all the trial lessons are with me because I want to meet the client, you know, whether it's an adult student or it's the parents. I don't want to just enroll someone. So I like to meet them. I give them a tour of the studio. I show them around. We talk about things. And then we do like a little sample lesson with the student. Usually I want them to make music and be happy instantly. So I usually teach something by rote and do some improv just to be like, look, you can make something up. You didn't even, you know, you don't even know the notes and all this stuff. And it's amazing, you know, so I want them to have a good time. Then once they enroll, well, so one of the reasons I like the free trial lesson is we probably have like 85 to 90% conversion. So 85 to 90% of people who come for a free trial lesson sign up. So, I mean, to me, that's worth it because it's 30 minutes of my time and then they're paying thousands of dollars over their whole enrollment, you know, many, many thousands if they stay for years, right? I mean, tell me that's not worth it. Yeah. Then once they enroll, I will match them up with the instructor based on the two main things, which are whatever I think is a good fit with, you know, personality and teaching styles and all that. And the schedule. So obviously if the student says we can only do Mondays, well then I have to choose from which Monday teachers are available.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. We've touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious what kind of things you do in your studio to promote a sense of community among the teachers and among the students from different teachers.
Yeah. So we have studio recitals, which I'm sure lots of teachers do. So that's really not any different. However, we do have a nice performance space in the studio. So our lobby is really big, like bigger than we need for a waiting area. So it kind of doubles as like part of it is a waiting area. And then when we have an event, there's a grand piano in there. So we set up chairs and we can have it right there. So that's nice just to, for many reasons, but that definitely helps just the community feel, you know, they're coming here again, you know, to play for an event or whatever. And then the benchmark program, like I said, definitely promotes, you know, cohesion because they're all sort of working on that same program together and they can actually see other students and where they stand too, because we have like a poster in the hallway, and it's a magnetic board, and their names are on there, and they see where they are and they move across. And when we do our periodic group classes, they'll see other students. Everybody has a binder, and the front cover has their name and their bench color, like the symbol. And so that's kind of like they can kind of show off, or they'll see other students like, oh, you're green, I'm only orange. So yeah, that helps not only, you know, the sense of community that they're all working on it together, but also just motivation. And then we do also have, sometimes we'll do challenges or contests certain times of the year, like a practice challenge or 20-piece playlist or, you know, something like that. So yeah, they'll all be working on that. And sometimes we have a leaderboard where they can see their progress. And then usually we have awards or a party or some kind of celebration to honor the winners, if there's winners, or, you know, everybody who completed the challenge or whatever it was.
Great. It sounds like you have some really fun stuff going on. So Clinton, I would love to know, do you recommend this model to other teachers, to these teachers who, solo teachers who are thinking of hiring to have a multi-teacher studio? Do you recommend it? And what advice would you give to those teachers?
Yeah, definitely recommend it. I don't know, I guess it would be kind of weird or bad faith if I didn't recommend it, because that's what I'm doing.
Maybe a better question would be, what are the challenges that they would face or that might surprise them?
Well, yeah, I do want to say you have to like running a business and doing all the business things. So that's not for everybody. So I really like it. I love it. Like when it's time to like figure out the calendar and all that, like it's fun. It's exciting.
Oh my goodness. I'm sending you my calendar, because that's like my worst 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah. Like I like it. So I like, you know, figuring out how to have the policies efficient and how to communicate with the parents. And so, yeah, so you have to, I don't know if this is advice. Yeah, it is. Just, you have to like that part of it. So if you don't like managing your single or solo studio, and you know, you just want to teach, and then yeah, I wouldn't do it, even if you think you should, because you would make more profit or whatever it is, because you really have to like that part of it, or it definitely helps to like it. Yeah, I would say start gradual, ease your way into it. You know, like I did, it was really nice because it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to start a studio. Let me find a giant space and rent it out and hire teachers and figure out how that works. I mean, that's possible, but it's definitely easier to, you know, do it gradual like me, where I just started hiring a teacher where I already was, you know. So if it's your own studio, you're at a church or something, and that's nice too, to sort of back off of your own teaching and start doing more admin while that other teacher teaches, because, you know, you're making money off of that. Yeah. And also, if you could start with like a new teacher or like apprentice who's willing to learn, I think that would be really good. So obviously one of the ideal teachers would be somebody who's experienced and very good, and, you know, and already has all this. But I think it's good too, if you have somebody new who's willing and they want to sort of be an apprentice, and that's gradual too, right? Like you wouldn't give them students on the first day. They would be observing, and you kind of observe them, and maybe some of it's paid or paid at like a half rate or something. And then they start having all this experience, and then they start teaching. They can observe you and shadow you, start taking over, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a really good suggestion. I've actually heard of a couple of teachers in my area who have former students who have now, you know, graduated or maybe close to graduating from high school, who are now kind of being as an apprentice under them, with the idea that they'll start taking some students along the way as well. So I think that's another way that more experienced teachers who have older students can start getting their feet wet, I guess, with the multi-teacher thing without necessarily hiring another full-time teacher.
Right. Right. In fact, the benchmark program that I was talking about, one of the other aspects of it and reasons that I designed it was actually once you get to black bench, you know, it's like a black belt, right? There's black first degree, black second degree, black third degree. So black first degree is basically that's as far as you advance with piano proficiency. But then that also doubles as an apprentice teacher. And so my whole idea, which hasn't really happened yet because I haven't had anybody, but is that they would be, once they get that far, then they would be an apprentice teacher. And then black second degree is like a master teacher. So now they've had more experience. And then the black third degree is sensei. And I don't think that exists anywhere. Somebody can go from being a beginning pianist all the way to like an experienced teacher, because usually you do that at different places, right? Like you take piano lessons, then you go to like college, and maybe you don't even learn how to teach there. You take one pedagogy class, and then you learn how to teach from experience, right? And so really my dream, and I think it's a really good idea, is to have like a system where prospective teacher and you know, advanced pianist would learn teaching by doing it. I mean, think of how much experience you would get, and not to like knock college degrees, because I have two of them, but you know, we don't get a whole lot on how to teach. We get other things. And so imagine, instead of going into debt for 4 years to get a degree, and like, yes, you have lessons, you have some music classes, you don't get too much on how to teach. So instead of that, what if you had 4 years of shadowing and observing and apprentice teaching, and you're not even in debt, because you would actually start getting paid. So like you'd start earning an income earlier, and no debt, and you have experience. I think that's really good. So it's just a matter of convincing people, hey, don't go to college for a degree, be a apprentice at my studio.
Or go to college nearby and do both. Get the best of both worlds, right?
There you go.
Yeah, that was very clever of you to set it up that way. I like that. So Clinton, what is coming up for you that you are excited about in the coming months, either in your studio or your own professional life?
Yeah, so I have a concert coming up next month. I'm playing with my friend, Michael Ronstadt, who's a cellist. And that's really fun for many reasons, but one, it's kind of rare because I don't really play that much anymore. I'm mostly, you know, teaching, running the studio and going to conferences, and I do RCM exams and all those other stuff. So it's fun to like actually play, and I get to, you know, play the piano. So that's fun. And then I also just recently finished my last requirement to become a master teaching artist for the American Eurythmics Society, which that's one of my like favorite things to do, is Dalcroze Eurythmics. It's this amazing philosophy of movement and having students experience and know music through movement. Yeah, I basically finished that. And so I'm just waiting on the official status. And then that means that I can basically run a like summer training workshop for other teachers and certify them. And then I have one more thing for the studio. I'm actually going to start a group class for students, and they don't have to practice.
Wow. How old are these students? Are they like beginners?
Yeah. And there might be different age groups. I'm going to start one that's probably, like 6 to 8 or 6 to 9 years old or whatever. But I wanted something for, because sometimes there are students who they don't enroll, or they do enroll and they quit because, you know, just the practicing is, the parents can't get them into a routine, or, you know, there's all these reasons. And, you know, to pay for the monthly tuition, you know, the parents are like, we're not going to really fork out this money, when they, basically we're just dropping them off at a lesson, you know. And so my idea, I've asked some students who have quit, I said, would you come back if we had a class, which is just really like an enrichment class? You don't have to practice. You don't even have to have a piano at home. You just show up. It's an hour. It's like half the cost of monthly tuition for private lessons. So it costs less. You don't have to practice. Just drop them off. They're still going to learn things. They'll have fun. And several of them said, yes, we would do that if you offered it. So I'm going to start it. I have to teach it because I have to like beta test it. And then if that goes, then maybe, you know, I could help some other teachers teach that and it can grow into a thing. But I'll just start with one and see how it goes.
Yeah, I like this idea. I'm interested to hear how it goes. No practice piano class. I actually teach a couple classes like that. I don't say that they don't have to practice, but my expectation is that they're probably not going to. And it works, you know, they retain from week to week. And by the end of the class, I'm like, well, they know more than when we started. So that's good. It's a kind of a time for them to learn about the piano, black and white notes, where the note, you know, the note names, things like that. And they can learn little songs. I feel like the songs, they don't retain as well because they're not practicing from week to week, but they seem to retain the musical concepts pretty well.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, I'll include a lot of improvisation because that's one of my big things. You know, like here's a really easy pattern and just play whatever and it sounds good. And the idea is that if they do have a piano at home, they will end up playing, you know, so it's not like you can't play it at home. It's like, you don't have to, but then hopefully the class is fun and they'll want to replicate it like, oh, that was a fun, like jazzy sound, bluesy sounding thing. And so they'll just naturally go to the piano at home and like repeat it and do it again. And then hopefully that'll get momentum and motivation. Maybe they'll want private lessons or kind of some other kind of experience.
Well, Clinton, this has been so fun chatting with you today. I learned a lot and I know that listeners, I'm sure, will as well. If listeners want to get in contact with you or learn more about you, where can they find you?
You can go to thepianosenseiway.com. That's sort of my teacher website. And I have a podcast for piano teachers as well. And that's what it's called, The Piano Sensei Way.
Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing your knowledge with us, Clinton. It has been a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Clinton Pratt. I know I got a little fired up a couple times because, as I mentioned, I also run a multi-teacher school and there are some aspects that I'm still figuring out. So it was nice for me to talk to someone else in a similar situation and hear his perspective on it. So thank you, Clinton, for sharing with us. That's the end of the show for this week. Next week, you don't want to miss the show. I'm going to be talking with Kelly Rorden about marketing your teaching studio, and she has some really amazing advice. If you are in the position of just starting your studio or wanting to grow and gain more students. So be sure to tune in next week for that. I'm Rachel Ehring, and you've been listening to the Top Music Piano Podcast. I will talk to you again soon.